Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, and most importantly, the stars. Good evening, stargazers, and thank you so much for joining me today as we talk about what I call cosmic conjure or star magic. This is a branch of magic that draws energy from celestial sources, follows cosmic or astrological seasons and directives, and even features spirits and deities of an extraterrestrial nature. I love astrology, as many of you know, and I also love space. I love stargazing. I love watching the moon move across the sky. I keep up with all of those images of far distant planets that come through NASA. And I've developed like this bizarre obsession with the surface of Jupiter. I just think it is the most spellbinding thing I've ever seen. And in general, I count the stars and the planets among my natural magical allies, just like trees and crystals and animals. As a Capricorn, I'm ruled by Saturn, the planet of time and space. And in fact, timing and the precession of time is a big part of my practice, even if I never really thought about it that way. I use astrological days and hours in my magic and just naturally exist in this kind of odd state between time. My look, a lot of my beliefs, my self-expression, my interests, all of it seems to simultaneously exist in the distant past and the not-so-distant future. Saturday, ruled by Saturn, is my most powerful day of the week. This is often when I find myself most able to connect to my intuition and psychic power, when I'm most productive, and also when I'm the most at ease. Every Saturday, if the night is clear, I take time to look up at the stars and to, you know, ask them to shine their little magical light on me. This is something I've always done, really. You know, all kids look at the stars. They all love the stars. And as a kid, constellations and the mythology and the stories behind them was of great interest to me. I was obsessed with it. And in addition to wishing on stars, which I again did just like all other creative children, I also often just spoke to them. In difficult moments, I would find myself reaching out to a bright star and asking it to keep me safe, to offer me strength, and to watch over me. When I think back to where this idea came from, it's actually a Disney movie, which is a little embarrassing, but it's Pinocchio. And I swear I haven't thought about it this in years, because Pinocchio is not a movie that I absolutely adored. But I loved the blue fairy that was in the star that he wished in. And I often kind of thought of this stellar, you know, fairy godmother sitting up in that star, you know, listening to me. Even when smaller and more distant stars are obscured by the light of their stellar cousin, the sun, I know that they're all around us and will be for millions of years even after I'm gone. And I find that really comforting. I'm not someone who applies any sort of single label to myself or my practice beyond the word witch, so I never considered myself a cosmic witch, especially because I do a lot of things that don't fall under that umbrella. But whenever I see the memes sharing about, you know, witches who work with space and the cosmos, I often find myself thinking, that's not it. My favorite is a meme that shares five different types of witches. And under cosmic witches, it says astrology, zodiac, horoscopes, and celestial energy. It's like, what? First of all, three of those are the same thing. You know, horoscope and zodiac kind of fall under the astrology umbrella there. And celestial energy is quite vague. So, you know, I have been looking for quite some time to kind of find the information that backs up these memes. You know, where did this come from? So I dug around and this kind of vague idea of cosmic witchcraft is really, really popular in those memes and in gorgeous artwork of really cool modern space witches. You can find tons of that. But actual practices with the stars beyond astrology are kind of hard to find. Even in researching today's episode, I had a hard time finding well-established information, and so a lot of the spells and the rituals and the practices that I share in this episode are my own. Two books that I can recommend right off the bat are Earth, Air, Fire, and Water, More Techniques of Natural Magic by Scott Cunningham, and Star Magic by Sandra Kynes. Star Magic is a newer book. It was written, I believe, in 2011. And this is really kind of the main one for individual stars and individual constellations, what they mean, the stars that are in them, and also some background information on working with the stars in your practice, some like correspondences. The Scott Cunningham book is a follow-up to Earth Magic. These are very small books, but to this day, this Earth, Air, Fire, and Water remains one of my absolute favorite books of spells and of magic ever. Scott Cunningham was a Wiccan author in the late 80s and the 90s, and is really like only second to Silver Ravenwolf in my early witchy education. I love him. He was a truly kind and like really chill human being who believed witchcraft and Wicca should be more open to the average person and less ceremonial if that's how someone wants to practice. You know, he was a very laid back kind of practitioner that incorporated a lot of, you know, folk type magic in with his Wiccan practice. Scott Cunningham also, like Silver Ravenwolf, talked about how practicing alone could be just as important as practicing with others, so he released a lot of books on witchcraft and Wicca that were for solitary witches. It was just kind of lovely, and I have a lot of love for Scott Cunningham. I often feel like he's this like uncle or father figure in witchcraft. I remember one time I described him as the really cute camping dad who was, you know, helping out all the kids bait their fishing rods or put up tents or something like that. Very sweet guy in my imagination. And I still highly recommend all of his books, except for the one on Hawaiian spirituality. I didn't love it. But anyways, this small volume is by far my favorite of all of his books, and it's because it featured some specific types of magic I still haven't seen many other places, and that includes star magic. So chapter 13 of Earth, Air, Fire, and Water, which begins on page 111 for those who like magical numbers, is titled Star Magic, and was my very first introduction to consciously working with the stars in a modern magical practice. One of his concepts was choosing, or being chosen by, a star of power that you can attune to whenever you need to connect with the cosmos. You can do this by physically sitting outside and searching the night sky, waiting for, you know, a tug from your intuition. And you can also look at lists of stars and maybe their backgrounds or meanings and choose one of those with which you relate. Likewise, you could choose a star from the constellation associated with your sun sign or your main zodiac sign. For example, right now is Leo season, so all of you that are Leos, what that means is that when the tropical zodiac system was created, which was a very long time ago now, the sun aligned with the constellation Leo at this time of the year. They no longer line up. And that's kind of a weird thing to think about. Leo is no longer the constellation that backs the sun at this time of year. If you are ever curious about your sun sign based on a more modern or realistic view of the sky, I recommend looking up sidereal astrology, which uses the actual location of those constellations based on, you know, the year that you're living in now. Anyways, within the constellation of Leo is a star called Regulus, which is one of the brightest stars in the sky. Regulus actually is a small cluster of three stars, but it really appears as one because of their placement. So this orange and red star is associated with power, courage, and success, as well as attracting the things that you want. The caveat here is Regulus helps you attain these things only if you use them for good. If you cross the threshold toward using these things for ill, Regulus will take everything away from you. Which is badass, right? The stars are actually pretty intense. So the thing to remember when selecting a star, no matter how you do it, is timing. Timing is big in the cosmic conjure. Every season, different constellations and stars are visible depending on your location. So if you live far from either pole, either north or south, you may need to choose a star for every season, or, you know, for the seasons when you observe stars. You can also pick one that is closest to the pole and is probably going to be visible year-round from your location. My personal star of power is Vega, which is the brightest in the summer sky and part of the Lyra constellation. This is the star that most grabbed my eye when sitting on the balcony of my old apartment. And actually, when I look back at, I've lived in the same city my whole life, right? And looking back at the locations of past houses and my bedroom windows, it's quite possible in the summertime, Vega really was that star that I spoke to as a kid and pictured that blue fairy. So I chose this star because I was sitting outside. It was the middle of summer, and I decided to choose myself a star of power. And to do that, I sat outside. I laid myself back, and I kind of let my eyes drift. I just let myself look across the sky. You know, if I saw a constellation or something I recognized, I acknowledged it and then just kept moving on to see where I was drawn to. When I felt that I had found my star, I used an app on my phone to tell me exactly which one it was and which constellation it was in, so that I could, you know, be myself and geek out and do a whole bunch of research on my star. So here are the details on Vega. Vega is a truly ancient star, and I don't necessarily mean the age of the star itself, but its prominence in the history of humanity. A very long time ago, around 12,000 to 10,000 BCE, a long-ass time ago, Vega was actually the North Pole star, which is Polaris now. That's how much the Earth's position has changed. In ancient Egypt, it was associated with Mayet, the goddess that we talked about once before here on the show, who was the personification of justice and of living a good life. After the sun, Vega was the first star ever photographed, and it's been studied more than any other star more consistently throughout human history. A lot of astronomical calculations, calibrating telescopes, and units of measurement for the stars were established using Vega. It was important the world over, as Vega can be seen in both hemispheres, so this is one that all of us can enjoy. In ancient Rome, autumn began the moment Vega dipped below the horizon, while in northern Polynesia, it was called Wetu o Te Tau. Wetu o Te Tau, the year star, and marked the beginning of the new year. The constellation that it's a part of, Lyra, is in the shape of a harp and was named after the lyre or lyre of Orpheus, the most famed musician in Greek mythology. And like many of these constellations based on Greek myths, it's said that Zeus created the constellation, marked it in the heavens to honor Orpheus after he was torn apart by Maenads, you know, but to honor his skill at creating the most beautiful music in the world at that time. He was also a pretty brave young lad, went to the underworld to rescue his lady love, which failed. that was a real Greek tragedy, that one. But many heroes and famous stories from Greek mythology ended up in the stars because Zeus wanted to immortalize them after they were gone. Now, those of you who listen to the show a lot and have heard quite a bit about me are probably thinking, like, wow, this star is like so you, which is exactly what I thought. Very interesting. Oftentimes, these things that our intuition is drawn to, when we look them up after, we see that it was, you know, exactly what we needed after all. So according to Ptolemy, who was our ancient Greek mathematician, astronomer, and astrologer, he's the one that, you know, recorded many of these names and this information about a lot of these stars and their magical properties. So according to him, Vega is associated with the energies of the planets Mercury and Venus. So it's associated with artistic talent, social awareness and justice, idealism, hopefulness, and magic. It's also a star that can avert fear or frighten it away. Vega really is a star to which you can, you know, hand over the things that scare you or make you too afraid to be your best self. And the idea is that its beautiful celestial light will kind of burn them away. How interesting is it that that's, you know, basically what I was doing as a kid and, you know, still do at times. You know, I let it just take away the thing that scares me so that I can continue to be the weird, sensitive, magical, idealistic, star-loving kid that I am in my heart. Aww. Kids are so in tune with magic, man. It's just like, sometimes I think about things I did as a kid and I'm like, oh, I was brilliant. Wish I still had those magical instincts. Every now and then they come out, right? So on the next clear night, you know, I encourage you to go outside, sit in a comfortable place that's dark and private, and spend some time looking up. And try to find yourself a star of power. Don't look at any star constellation specifically. I mean, you know, if you see one, you know, there's the Big Dipper. Acknowledge it and keep moving on. Just see where you're drawn to. And once you have a star picked out, you know, write it down. You can draw it maybe if you can see the constellation it's in, the general direction it's in, or of course use a fancy phone app that can tell you exactly what it is. SkyMap Lite is a good free app for iPhone, and I believe it's also on Android. And right now, Night Sky Premium has a 1-month free trial. Again, this is for iPhone. And you can get some really cool extended information and 360 views of some stars and constellations and planets. I looked at a 360 view of Polaris, the North Star, earlier. It was so, so cool. So what do you actually do with this star of power? I mean, you know, I offer up some fears and pain and allow it to transform them into artistic expression and hope and idealism. I also draw energy from my star, much like people will do with the moon, you know, drawing down the moon. Cunningham describes the star of power as a physical way to connect with this far, distant, and immense cosmic energy. Before engaging in any star or cosmic type magic, you can connect with your star and use it as a conduit to open you up to the sky. You know, it's like your cosmic emissary or guide. Even when I'm not able to be outside, I connect with Vega by calling the image of it into my mind and thinking about how it feels to sit under it, how it feels to feel kind of cradled by that energy. Or I'll use the color of the star in my spell. Vega is a blue-white star, and we'll actually talk a little bit more about colors later. But I will create the Lyric constellation with crystals or drawings. I can use it to charge objects. I can carve the sigil associated with the star into candles. I can use the associated sketchy herb and magic rock that are attributed to Vega by Ptolemy, which are winter or summer savory. I use summer since it's more accessible where I am. And a stone, it's olivine. But back then it was the gem version, so chrysolite or peridot. But just a nice raw olivine also works. I can do all of these things to connect with Vega, even though I'm not standing right underneath it. Just like you can use the correspondences to connect with any sort of natural energy. Vega is known as a fixed star. It's also one of the 15 Bahamian stars, which are extensively studied in ancient astronomy and astrology. The word Bahamian comes from the Arabic word for Baman, which means root. A lot of our ancient knowledge of stars and their magical applications came from Arabic scholars and astronomers. Did you know that? I often forget it. And I think I forget that sometimes because so many of, you know, we have this big constellation named after this Greek myth. And often we don't know what the individual stars in a constellation are. And if you got beyond the Greek myth, you see Arabic names of stars. How interesting is that? Sometimes I think we forget how close ancient Greece and the ancient Arabic world truly were. Like many stories from Greek mythology that we're all familiar with actually happened in what we now consider the Middle East. For example, the Greek city of Troy, you know, Trojan horse and that super haughty Helen. That city has theoretically been located. And it's in Turkey, because Turkey, you know, it's on the Aegean Sea right there. So a lot of the mystical and occult knowledge of stars is this very interesting combination of ancient Greek magic, ancient Arabic magic, and Kabbalistic sigils. It is so, so cool. So these 15 fixed stars were considered the most important in the sky and were attributed planetary energies as well as plants, stones, and the aforementioned Kabbalistic sigil that could be used in ritual to harness the star's magic. There are two kind of basic ways to use the fixed stars in magic. And the first is the ways I described earlier with Vega, you know, using its correspondent energy and its symbols and all of that. The other is, of course, through astrology. There are a lot of different types of astrology. I mentioned sidereal astrology earlier because sidereal astrology is a completely different system than what we normally hear about astrology here in the West, which is the tropical system. So we have our tropical zodiac, which is the one we're most familiar with. The sidereal zodiac is in line with where the constellations actually are in these particular seasons. And it's an entirely different system, really. That's not the only difference. That's just kind of the main one. And there is also fixed star astrology. And this is where the stars themselves, those 15 especially, but any number of stars, can provide further insight into the planets and the signs in your chart, depending on what angles they make with the planets there and the, you know, the all of the lines, the ascendant and the midheaven. What you're kind of looking for in your chart is stars that are either conjunct or parallel the planets in your chart. And that just tells you more about the energy of that planet. The star itself doesn't really influence, it just kind of explains. Now, the uncool thing about fixed star astrology is that, to me, it is confusing as hell. I cannot decipher it in my chart to save my goddamn life. So, I can find out where in my chart these 15 stars were when I was born, but then I would have to figure out the aspect myself and then, you know, try to identify all of that as a novice, and I can find out where the fixed stars are right now and even what that means. Time Nomad has a whole bunch of things. It has this whole thing about fixed stars where you can see where they are currently in the sky and what that means, but not the ones in my own chart for some reason. The point I'm trying to get across here is that this is an entire system that requires study right from the beginning. You know, you can't just go to a free calculator and be like, hey, where's Vega in my chart? And get a really clear answer of what that means. This comes to the part of Cosmic Conjure where I end up failing a little bit, and that it's very mathy. Space is very mathy. Time is so mathy. And the entire act of studying space is full of math and physics. And if you're just not someone who's good with that, it can take a little longer to grasp some of the concepts. And I mean, that's okay. It happens, right? I'm actually really super jealous of people that have very, very numbers-oriented brains. I just think that that is so... Yeah, that just sounds like it's an incredibly useful skill. Such a useful skill. Numbers really are everywhere. So I'm currently reading Brady's Book of Fixed Stars by Bernadette Brady, and this is like the book to understand fixed star astrology. But it is going to take me a little bit longer to get through. I was hoping that by now I could offer you guys a really, really thorough intro, but I mean, I don't love to talk about things I don't understand. So I'll be putting some links to some of the websites and the books and stuff that I used for research. But if you're curious about the fixed stars in your chart, what I've discovered is that the best way to get started is finding a professional who specializes in this specifically to explain those stars and where they are in your chart to you. I know I'm on the hunt for one of those now. So if you know someone who reads fixed stars and birth chart, I'm super curious about it. Now, if you're someone who's always been skilled in math and in physics and maybe even the scientific side of space exploration, you know, the astronomy instead of the astrology, you might find that a lot of different parts of this idea of cosmic conjure, they make a lot of sense in your brain. I've actually known a lot of people who have this just more logical and mathematical oriented brain, and they feel like they're just not made to understand magic. You know, science and math and spirituality are at odds. They're at opposite sides of the spectrum. But I just don't believe that. I think it's good for everybody. And every time I learn a little bit more about space and stars and astrology, it becomes even clearer to me that those of you math-minded people are not unmagical or disconnected from the world of magic and impossible things. For now, I will continue to look on the stars, whether they're the classic 15 or others, as natural symbols and points of magic and energy. Like other natural allies like plants and crystals, stars, you know, they have personalities and magical colors and correspondences and roles in history and mythology that all have a place in your personal practice, even if you're not interested in pursuing the actual astrology side. When it comes to constellations, Perseus is a really great example of all of these things. The constellation Perseus is noted as actually a winter season constellation in Star Magic by Sandra Kynes, because it's higher in the sky and easier to identify later in the year from now, in the Northern Hemisphere, remember. But the great hero is visible right now, just above the horizon, and plays host to an annual meteor shower known as the Perseid meteor shower, or just the Perseids. So all of the shooting stars that you see will appear to radiate from the head of the Perseus constellation. Every year, starting in mid-July, we can start to see these little fiery pieces of the Swift-Tuttle comet that pass into our atmosphere and create these, you know, these beautiful long tails of light. During the peak, which is always in mid-August, and this year is August 12th to 13th, you can see more than 50 falling stars an hour, without even having to be up around sunrise, though the few hours before sunrise are the best time to see them, apparently. I never make it that. I'm never up that early, and I don't make it that late anymore. Magically speaking, meteor showers are times of intense celestial energy that really, really just wants to be pulled down into the atmosphere, right? Though hopefully without any physical debris attached. Shooting stars have always been associated with making wishes and asking for the things and the circumstances in life that we want. So these meteor showers are a powerful time for manifestation and bringing in abundance, you know, bringing in a lot of what it is that we want or that we need. It's no coincidence that the Perseids come during the season of Lunasa, which we talked about in my last podcast. As Perseus, the hero, and Lou actually have a lot of similarities in their mythology. They're both considered these bright and shining heroes. You know, they were born to mothers who were locked up or imprisoned. They were prophesied to kill their grandfathers and become king, and they did that both times. So there are a lot of parallels between their stories and their overall personalities. The Perseus constellation in magic is associated with protection, warding off evil, and breaking hexes. Very cool. Perseus is not the only figure to appear in the constellation, though. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Perseus in Greek mythology is the hero who cut off the head of the snake-haired Gorgon woman Medusa. And in this constellation, there is a star representing her called Algol. In Arabic, Algol means the head of the demon. And the ancient Hebrews associated with one of our modern feminist faves, Lilith. Hopefully, this kind of tells you a little bit about this star already. For centuries, Algol was associated with demons, bad luck, and of course, the overwhelming sexual power of women. It's a star of evil and of shame and of wanton sexuality. Isn't it great? I love it. So, I love it. Our modern revisions to the stories of Lilith and Medusa really frame this star in a new way for me. And I see it as sort of a patron of badass witch women, you know? Add in the fact that the associated crystal for this star is diamond, you know? Girl's best friend, long considered a symbol of women's financial independence and or domination of men using their sexual energy, which I respect, and the plants mugwort and black hellebore, which have always been associated with witchcraft and wild women like the Maenads. I'm even more convinced that Algol is the badass star for me here. The entire constellation of Perseus is associated with Saturn and Jupiter, but most of these Saturnine influences actually stem from Algol and its association with the dark magic of women, especially. In addition to using the energy of the entire shower, all of the Perseids, for manifestation and protection, consider connecting directly with Algol to increase your own witchy power and strength, to heal or work with your sexuality, to break free of oppression by men or patriarchal rules, cursing and hexing rapists and sexual abusers. That's Algol's shit right there. And you can also work with it to honor the dark goddess-type energies of Medusa, Lilith, and the Maenads. If you grow black hellebore or mugwort for magical purposes, consider using this time when the star is really, it's really surrounded by all of this magic, to draw that energy directly into your plants. If you're looking to harness this energy on a more regular basis, consider making Algol your star of power. But remember, this is a very powerful and intense star. And all of these stars, they have these really incredible qualities, but they also have this other side, the other side of the star that you don't see. Can be a little bit darker, the darker side of the qualities of the star. This is another that's also actually a cluster of stars of all different colors and distances from us. So that's really a lot of energy to try to call into yourself. When it comes to colors associated with star magic, the list is a little shorter than usual because stars come in very limited colors. And light just doesn't work the same way in space that it does here. Many of the most visible stars are some combination of blue or yellow and white, though there are also stars that appear red, orange, purple, and green, though the last two are super rare. Blue stars are good allies for astral travel and dream work. They hold energy of clarity, communication, emotion, harmony, spirituality, and wisdom. When combined with white, the spiritual energy is heightened, and those stars are even better for astral and dream work as well as divination and increasing psychic power. All white stars are also symbols of enlightenment, purity, protection, and hope. Yellow stars are great for contacting spirits and celestial beings. They represent devotion, faith, and inspiration. When combined with white, you have stars that grant religious and spiritual enlightenment and can heighten your clairvoyance and clairaudience to help you communicate better with spirits and extraterrestrial life forms. I do mean aliens, just to be clear. They're also very lucky and bestow happiness and good fortune. Yellow stars are just a very, very happy kind of star. Red stars have this very Martian nature, right? And they're aligned with activation and energy. So they're really good for breaking curses or putting curses on others. And they're aligned with things like passion and determination, creativity, willpower, and sex. Orange stars are great for attraction and manifestation. So they're aligned with prosperity, change, transformation, confidence, discipline, justice, and luck. Their fiery energy also makes them useful for causing kind of a swift and violent change or transformation. Lilac or purple colored stars are really rare, and the only one that I personally know of is in the Corvus constellation. But these are really your ultimate stars for astral travel, divination, psychic stuff, and dream work. They represent, you know, the ultimate height of spiritual wisdom and inspiration and self-awareness and magic. Green stars are rarer still because, well, they're technically not real. I've never seen a green star, and apparently they're great for healing and, again, communicating with spirits. They're associated with good luck and wealth as well, like most green magical objects. But the thing is, green stars are actually an optical illusion. Our eyes perceive them as that color for a lot of reasons, one of them being that sometimes a star is actually a small cluster of stars that are all different colors. So if you have a blue and yellow star in the same place, often to our eyes, the light appears green. Since these depend on your perception, you know, that star might only look green to you. I find that to be kind of a personal message, a little bit of a pull just for you. If you find a green star, pay attention to which one it is and see what that star's energy can do for you if you include it in your practice. Vega is a blue-white star, while our badass El Gol is actually a cluster. So it contains blue-white, an orange star, and then a plain white star. The only purple star I know of is Algareb on the wing of the Corvus constellation, which is the shape of a raven. This is cool because this constellation is all about messages from the spirit world, and Algareb being purple, that makes it kind of doubly so. That star is associated with the onyx crystal. The herbs are burdock, henbane, and comfrey. Again, kind of classic witchy herbs. And it's also got this very Saturn-y energy with a little hint of Mars. In medieval medicinal magic, it was used to drive away evil spirits from people. So you can use these colors, you know, in your candles, you can wear them, you can use paint or art supplies to, you know, create some sort of symbol for that star, or you can use altar decoration to further channel the energy of the stars. I know from experience that anxiety, fear, and depression can keep you from manifesting your most magical life on the best of days, and which is, these days are not the best. That's why if you're struggling or feeling lost, I want you to consider reaching out to a professional licensed therapist through BetterHelp. Within 24 hours, they'll assess your needs and match you with a therapist that is specially trained to deal with everything from depression and anxiety to grief, conflicts at home, and even sexuality and gender across the spectrum. It's all online, so there's no awkward social distancing in the waiting room. You're in the comfort and safety of home. You can message your therapist anytime and schedule weekly audio or video chat sessions. The service is available worldwide. It's more affordable than in-person therapy, and they offer financial aid to those who need it. Lately, so many people have been reaching out that BetterHelp is actually recruiting more counselors in all 50 states right now. I want you to manifest the life of your dreams, starting today. As a listener, you can get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/fatfeministwitch. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/fatfeministwitch. When it comes to working with star magic in a modern, practical practice, the lack of information that's out there just means that the sky really is the limit for the ways that you can use it and the methodology, you know? Cosmic Conjure is brand new. You can create it. So I've come up with a list of like tips and examples of ways that I've used it. And I hope they help you or inspire you. So before doing any magic with outer space, I suggest grounding via the Earth Star Chakra. This is a chakra that's not in your physical body, but exists below your feet under the ground. This is the tether that ties our non-physical energy to the planet. I like to use this point specifically because it doesn't have that heavy, comfortable feeling from regular grounding. You know, I don't feel physically stuck on the planet. Instead, I feel almost like I'm free to float because I have this safety tether that will keep me from getting too far away. I actually have an exercise for connecting with your Earth Star Chakra using aragonite crystals. It's really cool, like a rusty orange star type crystal in my book, Green Witchcraft. And that's the one I often use when doing any sort of star magic. Crystals in general are one of my favorite tools when I'm working with stars. And I think I've actually talked about the ones I use a lot on the podcast in other episodes before. I know for a fact I have an entire blog post on my website called Magic Rocks from Outer Space, which I will put the link to in the description, that features crystals that are either produced by extraterrestrial objects like comets and meteorites, as well as those that are, you know, earthly, but aligned with the stars. Tektite is a glass that's formed when a very hot meteorite makes contact with the Earth. So it can only be found in, you know, the resulting craters and what's called strewn fields from this impact. This is a really interesting stone because it's one that I can kind of physically feel when I hold it. Not all crystals do that, but this one really feels, I can feel like my entire arm vibrate. And if I hold it long enough, it definitely comes up my shoulder to my ears and has made my ears pop more than one time. No surprise that it's a great stone for communication, both earthly and stellar. So it's perfect for this, you know, situation. It's also very good for manifesting during star magic rituals like the meteor showers. Galaxyite is not made in outer space. It's a form of feldspar. It's a lot like labradorite, like a micro labradorite. But because of that micro shiny feldspar, it has a very galactic appearance. And I use this stone constantly. I'm holding it in my hand right now. I have a palm stone and I also have this wand. And this wand is probably, it's my most used crystal at this point. It's just my favorite. It's the number one best stone for cleansing and for repairing your aura. So not only does it open you up to other realms, you know, the astral realm, the spiritual realm, the fairy realm, but its healing effect on your aura stabilizes you for any sort of travel between them. So this is a really good stone to hold, to carry while you're doing any sort of astral travel, or dream work, or communicating with spirits, or investigating the stars in any way. Its alignment with the stars makes it good for helping people understanding stars and galactic information better. When you place it on a birth chart, it can help you see things that you might not otherwise. It can help you understand and make more connections. So I'm definitely going to be clutching my little wand when I go back to reading Brady's Fixed Stars, and hopefully those chapters I've already read twice will actually make some sense this third time. Some other crystals you might want to explore are moldavite, celestite, meteorite, and blue goldstone. Blue goldstone's really pretty. That's another one that's earthly, but it looks like a beautiful field of stars. There are lots of plants aligned with stars and star magic, actually, but two that I use a lot are borage flowers and the star-shaped anise seed pods. So borage flowers are these small, bright blue star-shaped flowers that grow in these little clusters on tall, fuzzy stalks with these slightly prickly leaves. I just think they're such an interesting-looking flower. They have so many things going on. They have this really fresh and clean flavor, like cucumber, and the flowers can be candied or they can be made into teas and potions. I also love adding dried borage flowers to, if I'm trying to make a starry incense, I'll use the dried flowers in that. But it's got a really nice flavor, so it's something I like to ingest more often. Borage to me feels like drinking in that clear magic of the stars, creating that connection with me and the cosmos. It makes a bridge. So I'll drink a borage tea whenever I'm partaking in star magic or trying to channel that kind of cosmic and expansive energy in psychic work especially. It really opens your third eye and your throat chakras more so that you can receive spiritual information more clearly. Doesn't hurt that physically you might have some slight feelings of euphoria and an overwhelming feeling of safety. So, it also keeps me from thinking a little too hard about the depth and infinity of space, which is spooky. Is real spooky. Anise is a black licorice flavored spice that grows in these really gorgeous star-shaped seed pods. I associate the energy of anise with the deep, inky blackness of space, a lot like, they have a really similar vibe to me of cloves. They're very similar. They're not similar spices, but they have this kind of similar profile where they both have this real nighttime blackness vibe. Really, really like it. Anise is used in sleep or dream magic. It can help you fall deeply asleep and move further into the realm of dreams. It protects you from evil spirits and any beings that wish to do you harm. I actually, oh my god, found one single reference to using, the full star-shaped anise pods in a spell to protect either against alien abduction or from, night terrors and paralyzation. So cool. So in this, you hang the full pods on a garland above your bed, or you can also make a circlet that hangs around your brow to keep you out of sight of any creatures who wish to do you harm. You can also burn black candles dressed with anise oil or drink it in a tea for these purposes. Super interesting. Not everyone wants to be abducted by aliens, and that's fine. I watch a lot of X-Files, so I'm pretty good with staying on the ground. In general, anise is really great for increasing psychic awareness and convincing good spirits to come to your aid. It's very good spirit communication. And apparently it's great for inducing kind of lusty energy when you drink it. Although my history with Sambuca begs to differ. All it brings on is nauseous energy. But, I digress. The time of the new moon is obviously the best time for star magic because they become the greatest source of light in the sky. Sometimes during new moons, I'll, just ignore that non-visible moon instead and focus on the stars. New moons are the best time for a method of divination called star scrying. This is another practice I learned from that Scott Cunningham book and have been using on my own for years. For those reading my new book, The Grimoire Journal, You can actually find Scrying with Stars on page 53 of that book. It's one of my faves, right? So scrying is the kind of official word for the method of divination most common with tea leaves and crystal balls. You open your third eye, you point it at your method of divination, and you search for symbols reflected back at you, or, the tea leaves fall in certain patterns and objects. And these give you insights into your question or into the future. With a crystal ball, you see image or patterns appear in the reflections and in the light and possibly in shadows. A night sky with no moon is also an amazing scrying tool. So here's what I do. I find a really nice dark spot where nothing is going to take away my attention. I find that it's really easy to get distracted. And when you get distracted, it's really hard to go back to your place because the sky is so large, right? So you want it to be fairly quiet. I like to have a notebook or, have your phone memos app ready to record in case I find something that I need to look up a little bit later. So I begin by locating Vega, my star of power, and just letting myself, feel that connection. Holding the question in my mind, sometimes I'll actually ask it out loud, but, I don't want anyone to hear me. So you hold the question in your mind and then let your eyes drift and observe any part of the sky that you feel drawn to. Depending on how you receive psychic information, you might get it a little bit differently during star scrying. So sometimes I see patterns in the stars, and I don't just mean the established constellations. I'm not just looking at the Big Dipper, but I'll see a connect the dots type pattern that, just I see. I'll note what the shape is and what it makes me think of, and sometimes I'll research that symbol later. Sometimes I'm drawn to particular real established constellations or stars that I can recognize. And I'll use that book, Star Magic by Sandra Kynes, to look them up and see if they have a specific meaning that applies to my situation. Other times, and honestly, this is how it works most of the time now, I just receive the information intuitively while my eyes are drifting across the sky. This sounds odd that there could be so many ways for this to work, but honestly, this is the same way it works with tarot cards for me. Sometimes a specific piece of the image on the card said something to me, and sometimes the meaning of the card that's, long established actually is what sends me the message. And sometimes looking at the card, all of a sudden, that information just comes through my intuition for no real discernible reason. That's divination, baby. That's just how things go. So if you see certain patterns and shapes, I recommend making yourself a little symbol dictionary. Or to get started, I've found that if you can find a really cool dictionary for reading the symbols in tea leaves, a lot of those seem to also work well for stars. And I'm wondering if it's maybe because in both tea leaves and stars, the symbols are made up of a lot of, tiny little parts that come together. For some reason, they've just always lined up very well. And this is just something that becomes a little easier the more that you do it. When it comes to the elemental association of star magic, you're looking at the mystical fifth element known as spirit, or to other cosmic conjurers, akasha or ether. Ether is basically the air of outer space in the heavens. It's the atmosphere. It's what's breathed by the gods, what cradles the stars and the planets, and it's the very substance that all celestial life itself is suspended in. It's a non-physical element that is obviously of a very spiritual nature, and it's where our four terrestrial elements are created. The five-pointed pentacle star that is used as a symbol by a lot of modern witches and practitioners represents all of these elements together, with the top of the star representing ether, pointing up above us. The Akashic records exist in this same atmosphere, this spiritual plane beyond what we can see. The chakra in our physical body that connects most with this element is the crown, But like the Earth's star chakra, we have ones outside of our physical body that exist in the ether, namely the soul star chakra and the stellar gateway chakra. These are the ones through which your soul departs your body in death or in astral projection, and through which this element, you know, interacts with us. Meditation's the number one way of working with this element, and though a lot of the tools I've mentioned today, you know, they resonate with your crown chakra and they can help you connect, the only way is really through yourself, you know, your faith and belief and energy. That's why I said meditation really is the number one way here. It's really something that's inside you. Stars, astrology, and all of this cosmic conjure are all under the dominion of this mysterious element. One of my favorite star magic methods is combining all of this with the concept of crystal grids. So crystal grids use sacred geometry to, you know, to arrange crystals in what's called grids, which channel or produce certain types of energy depending on the shape of the grid itself and the types of crystals you use. So instead of using these geometric shapes, I like to recreate the shape of a constellation with crystals. Ugh, I dream of a day when I have enough like large chunks of crystal to create a big, large crystal, like constellation grid outside, you know, some nice big chunks of amethyst or quartz. But for now, the stones in my collection, the small ones on my altar, will have to do. So I've done this to charge objects with a particular type of energy, to cleanse and charge star magic tools and crystals themselves, and to celebrate the astrological seasons using those associated constellations. Clear quartz is the crystal I use the most to actually map out the pattern of the constellation. And then I put whatever I want to focus that energy on in the middle, just like with a regular crystal grid. You don't have to use the plain quartz. I just happen to have quite a few small quartz points, and they work perfectly for this. But you can use birthstones, you know, the ones associated with that zodiac constellation, if it's one of those. You can use the crystals associated with the fixed stars that are in the constellation, etc. You can also do this with candles. So you can carve the constellation or the star's sigil into a candle, or you can use small individual candles to map out, create the shape of your constellation. You can go the slightly extra step of getting candles that match the colors of each particular star in the constellation, or you can use some plain white ones. I tend to only recreate constellations that are currently in the sky above me in the current season. So right now, I wouldn't make a grid of the Orion constellation because his energy is focusing elsewhere in the world right now. But in the winter, I have made a little Orion grid. So if you want to work with Algol, for example, you can map out the Perseus constellation with your clear quartz crystals, but use a diamond, because I'm sure you don't have a handful of diamonds at your disposal, though if you do and you want to mail me some, that's cool. but use a diamond or even a lit candle to represent the actual Algol star. I'm not going to lie, you don't have to be so classy. I've also used glow-in-the-dark stars from the dollar store, or like star-shaped confetti and glitter to do this. Honestly, it's all good. Now, I am in the northern hemisphere, and in the southern hemisphere, you see a different set of stars than I do right now. You also have some stars down there that never come up to my side of the sky. And I didn't want to just leave all of you southern hemisphere witches hanging, but I did have a hard time finding information that's even you know, half as extensive as all this. And part of the reason for that is the books I read were written by people who live in this hemisphere. They were also written by American people. They were written by white people. And none of them are all up on all of the various Southern and Polynesian cultures that have extensive stories and folk magic and mythology about the stars. So if you guys have any really cool sources of information on this, I would love a recommendation. Many ancient Polynesian cultures use the stars to navigate. As you know, if your kids forced you to watch Moana and you've watched it 800 times on your own since then, the constellations and the stars were very important to these wayfaring people that populated and traveled between islands like New Zealand, Hawaii, Rapa Nui, Easter Island, Samoa, and Tahiti. Crux is the most well-known southern constellation, and it's often referred to as the Southern Cross. These stars, the Southern Cross, actually appear on the flags for Samoa, Australia, New Zealand, and Brazil. The Maori name for Crux is Mahutanga, and is seen as the anchor of the boat of Tamariratti who fell asleep and ended up far away from home when fishing in the lake. Back then, there were no stars, and the darkness was quickly approaching. He knew that no good ideas come on an empty stomach, so he found a small beach, went ashore, and cooked up some of the fish that he had caught before falling asleep and getting lost earlier in the day. After he'd eaten, he noticed that the pebbles and the rocks underneath his fire were glowing and luminescent, and he was struck with an idea. Instead of trying to find his way home through the lake he was on, he would take the great river in the sky back home. As he went, he sprinkled the luminescent rocks into the sky, creating the stars, and the wake of his canoe formed the Milky Way. When he got home, as day was approaching, he noticed that the god of the sky was there waiting for him. And boy, did he think he was in trouble. But the god of the sky loved the appearance. He loved the stars. He loved the light that they created. And he permanently anchored the waka in the sky to help guide others toward home. So if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, in Australia, New Zealand, Aotearoa, you can see Crux in November, and it will be a little closer to the South Pole. This constellation used to come up in the Northern Hemisphere, you know, once upon a time, it no longer does, and it was associated with the magic of the crossroads. So you can use this constellation and its energy to help you find direction in life, to make difficult decisions, or to lead you in the direction where you can be of service to others. So you can visit a crossroads at night, nice clear sky, and locate Crux. Ask the constellation for direction and let your gaze shift to the other luminescent pebbles glowing in the wake of Tamariratti's canoe for the answer. Even if you just look on the Wikipedia page for the Crux constellation, which I will put in the description, you will see how important just this tiny constellation was in so many Southern Hemisphere cultures, not just our wayfaring Polynesian friends. So I highly recommend looking that up, and I certainly will be looking for a book kind of like the ones I've been reading, based more on Southern Hemisphere stars and constellations and the cultures and the mythology that takes place in that part of the world. Again, if you guys know of a really, really good source for something like that, I would love a recommendation. So I talked a little bit about the meteor shower. The Perseid meteor shower takes place next week. It takes place now, but its peak is next week, the 12th and 13th. During the Perseid meteor shower here in the north, you southern witches have the Delta Aquarids, which are radiating from the Aquarius constellation. The main theme of Aquarius in this constellation is good luck. It is an incredibly fortuitous constellation, and the meteors that are radiating from it are especially good for making wishes. It's filled with yellow stars that herald, you know, good fortune, and they bestow happiness and friendship, and they help you make deep connections with those around you. So we have these two meteor showers. You know, it's all the same debris, realistically. But because of the constellation that we see them in from our different parts of the world, they have these different personalities and meanings and uses. Shooting stars shoot pretty fast. And if you want to carry that fast-moving energy into a longer ritual, Scott Cunningham offers this incredibly adorable short little invocation that can be said, you know, before the tail of your meteorite disappears from view. And that is, meteorite, charge my right. So you say this as kind of an energy-raising invocation before, you know, either before the shower or every time you see a meteor, so that you can harness that energy either into your hands or into a special ritual object so that you can use it beyond the point when the meteorite is visible. If you're listening to this episode when it comes out on Friday night, that means that tomorrow is Saturday, the prime day of the week for star magic. I've talked before about daily magic and that the planetary rulers of every day of the week. Saturday is ruled by Saturn, aligned with the element of ether, and it has a cosmic and a vast energy. Time means nothing and everything. It's also a good day to work on long-term projects or goals, think about the future or reminisce about the past, and to ditch bad habits. Saturn is the planet of boundaries and limitations in our classical tropical astrology, so it's a good day for magic that protects yourself and your property, as well as a really good day to kind of break through barriers in your path in a cool and calculated manner. It's also perfect for exploring the absence of boundaries in the magic of stars. Its alignment with ether or Akasha also makes it perfect, of course, for work that deals with past lives and incarnations, astral travel, and visiting your Akashic records, which is the source of this. The days also have planetary hours. There are 24 in a day, but they don't correspond with our regular, you know, Earth hours. The planetary hours begin at sunrise, so it's different in your location. No matter where you are, it's a little bit different. They begin at sunrise and go to the sunrise the next day. The best way to find out the planetary hours with an online calendar or calculator, again, I'm going to put a link in the description. But generally speaking, the first planetary hour of each day matches the planetary ruler of the day. So the first hour of the day tomorrow will be ruled by Saturn. And it continues on using what's known as the Chaldean sequence, which goes Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, Venus, Mercury, back to Saturn. To continue with this starry theme, this sequence is actually mapped out on a seven-pointed star that's also known as the Elven or Fairy Star to a lot of modern pagan practitioners. When you draw the star, you know, going to point, you come up with the sequence of the days of the week. And when you move around the outside clockwise, you actually have the planetary hours. So you have this, it's a little calendar slash clock. Can't tell you the exact hour, but it can tell you the general precession. The meanings of the planetary hours are the same, meaning if you have work to do that concerns the planet Venus and its energy, and it's not Friday, which is Venus's day, you can check your planetary clock, you know, your seven-pointed star, to see what hour of the day is ruled by Venus, and align with the planet's energy that way. You can also use the planetary hours to plan your literal schedule at work or home, especially now that you might be working from your house. I mean, fuck it, right? You could, absolutely. I mean, I don't recommend getting up before dawn because I think that sucks, but I like the sun to be up when I get out of bed. But you could very well use those planetary days to kind of map out what things that you'll be working on at which points during the day. No matter what time of day or night, or what planet rules the next 24 hours, the magic of the stars is twinkling above and below all of us, infusing our earthly existence with this cosmic magic. I hope I've inspired you to reach out and try some cosmic conjure for yourself. Don't forget that both the Perseid in the Northern Hemisphere and the Delta Aquinid in the Southern Hemisphere meteor showers peak next week, August 12th and 13th. As long as the night is clear, you'll be able to see shooting stars without a telescope or binoculars. You might want to wait until after 11, although they get brighter and more intense after midnight, with the ultimate peak to be the couple of hours right before sunrise. You can capture the magic of these shooting stars for manifestation, for big wishes, for women's empowerment, and maybe even making some new friends. In my last few episodes, I've been sharing some of the quotes that I included in the Grimoire Journal, and I'm kind of bummed that a couple weeks ago, I used my quote from Neil Gaiman's Stardust, which would have been perfect for this episode, you know? Do we gaze at the stars because we're human, or are we human because we gaze at the stars? Isn't that lovely? Oh, I suck. I didn't have this planned out as far enough in advance, I guess. So, what I did, instead of going into my own book and doing this promotional thing I had decided to do, instead, I pulled out my copy of Stardust to find ourselves a new quote. I literally ended up reading the whole book again because it's great. Like, I got totally suckered. I lost almost a day of work. It's so bad. But I found this beautiful quote that I absolutely love almost as much as the first one. The stars were laid out like worlds or like ideas, uncountable as the trees in a forest or the leaves on a tree. To learn more about me or the Fat Feminist Witch podcast, check out my website at thefatfeministwitch.com or find me on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. To support the show, you can, of course, buy my new book, The Grimoire Journal, A Place to Record Spells, Rituals, Recipes, and More. Or you can buy my first book, Green Witchcraft. You can also go to my website and click the button that says Buy Me a Coffee to make a small one-time donation. Or you can join my private monthly membership group through Patreon at patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch. Further still, you can advertise your witchy product or service on the show through advertisecast.com/thefatfeministwitch. Have a wonderful evening, witches. Be human, gaze at the stars and their hidden worlds and ideas, and then join me again next time here on the Fat Feminist Witch podcast.